is the Homestead Journey Podcast, the podcast dedicated to the pursuit of self-sufficiency, self-reliance, and sustainability. This is episode number 70 of the Homestead Journey Podcast. Welcome, everyone. I am so glad that you have found the show. If you are a new listener, welcome. And if you are a longtime listener, thank you so much for your support. I am so grateful for each and every one of you that tune in every week to hear me blather on about homesteading. My name is Brian Wells. I am coming to you from 3B Farm and Homestead here in beautiful upstate New York. And folks, this week I was out feeding the pigs one morning and I heard, well, it's just that sound that I look forward to every year. It just kind of reminds me that spring's on its way. And that is that I heard the first chickadee song of the season. Now, if you're not familiar with the chickadee song, it kind of goes like this. And there's just something about that. It's funny. You know, I kind of have these moments that I look forward to every spring that just kind of remind me that spring is coming. One of them is a chowder fest that happens the next town over. That usually is the Saturday before the Super Bowl. Unfortunately, this year, due to COVID, things were changed up a little bit. We weren't able to participate like we normally do, but that's my first indicator that spring is on its way. Then, of course, it's Super Bowl. And then it's listening for that sound, that song of the chickadee, And then, of course, tomorrow is the Daytona 500. And so it's just kind of those steps for me that just remind me that spring is on its way. But anyhow, this week, one morning when I was out feeding the pigs, I did hear that first. I can't even whistle tonight. Of the chickadee. And it just brought a huge smile to my face. Lots of snow on the ground still here in upstate New York. Supposed to get a lot of snow this coming week. In fact, I think we've got 2 or 3 days where we're supposed to get like 3 to 6 inches next week. So we will see. But at least those chickadees are singing. And that just warms my heart, even though I know that, well, spring still is a little bit away from us. Anyhow, let's jump on over to this week's Homestead Happenings, and I will bring you up to date with what we've been doing here on 3B Farm and Homestead. As I've said, I think the last 3 weeks, it has been a relatively, well, slow week homesteading-wise here on 3B Farm and Homestead. And a lot of that, again, just has to do with the weather. But there were a couple of highlights this week that I wanted to share with you. First of all, we really enjoyed a number of homestead meals this week. And we sat down to dinner tonight, and I was kind of talking with my wife about that. She didn't really remember that we had eaten a lot of homestead meals this week. And then she remembered, well, we had ham, and because of having ham, I really enjoyed that a number of different ways throughout the week. But we started out on Sunday by having one of our roasted meat birds that we raised last year. And there's just something about the satisfaction of sitting down to a meal where such a large portion of what's on the plate was raised by you that is just so satisfying. And so between that and us having that American guinea hog ham meal this week, which was then followed up tonight by some delicious split pea soup, it has just really been a very satisfying week for me this week here on the homestead. The other thing that has been happening here on the homestead, and I shared this on our Instagram and Facebook accounts, so if you're not following us there, definitely check those out. The links are in the show notes. But these things are starting to arrive. Hear them? Seeds. Our seeds are starting to arrive. Three of my orders arrived this week. So the one from Totally Tomatoes, which had, and that's the one that I showed on Instagram and Facebook, that has our mariachi and volcano peppers and Bella Rosa peppers. I'm sorry, Bella Rosa tomatoes that I ordered. Those are some of my favorites. And then my pine tree garden seeds, they arrived this week. That was the one I was confused about last week, what the seed company was called, but it's Pine Tree Seeds. And then my Baker Creek seed order arrived this week. And I got my notification yesterday that my Fedco order, which is really my biggest seed order, it shipped yesterday. So seeds inbound, and I am just getting so, so excited. Eventually, not going to be tomorrow, not going to be next week, but soon I'll be getting some seeds in the dirt, and that really just gets me excited. So I guess I would have to say that's one of those other things, those markers at the tail end of winter that remind me that spring is on its way. Anyhow, that's what's been going on here on 3B Farm and Homestead. Spring is on its way, and I certainly do hope this finds you well wherever you are at. Before we jump on over to this week's Charting the Course, I did want to remind you that if you are interested in supporting the show, you can do so in a number of different ways. First of all, you can leave us a review, a thumbs up, a five-star rating if you feel like we deserve that. And then also share the show with your friends. That really, really does help get the word out. And I really do appreciate that. Secondly, if you want to jump on over to our website, thehomesteadjourney.net/shop, there we have links to our t-shirt shop, as well as a bunch of links to Amazon, which are products that we use here on our homestead. And it's not just that we use them, but we think you may find them beneficial on your homestead as well. There are also links to a number of books that we find helpful, some cookbooks and so forth. And so check that out, thehomesteadjourney.net/shop. If you buy through those links, a portion of those sales do come back to help support the show and help me keep doing what I'm doing. And so I really, really would appreciate that. All right, let's hop on over to this week's Charting the Course. So today we are going to start a multi-part series with regards to seed starting. Now, by seed starting, I am talking about starting seeds either indoors or in a cold frame or in a greenhouse, with the idea that you will eventually relocate them to your garden or to a container. And then in that relocated spot or that transplanted location, that's where you're going to achieve, hopefully, an abundant harvest. That's a little bit different. Now, if you're brand new to gardening, that may be a bit of a new concept for you. Not every vegetable is a candidate for doing this. Some vegetables do better if you direct sow them, which means you plant them directly into the ground or the container or the raised bed where you anticipate achieving that abundant harvest. But there are some vegetables that do benefit from being started indoors and then eventually being relocated outdoors and being put into that raised bed or that container as a small plant. And there are actually some vegetables that you almost always have to start them that way. Now, obviously, you don't have to be the one to start them. You can buy transplants. You've probably seen them at Walmart or Home Depot or Lowe's. You may have seen them at your local mom and pop garden center or your local feed store, or you may have even seen them at a farmer's market. So you certainly can buy transplants. And in fact, back on episode number 8, so we're going back a long ways, but back on episode number 8, I did spend an episode talking a little bit about why you might want to buy transplants versus why you might want to start your own. I talked about the benefits and the drawbacks of each, and I had really thought this week a little bit about maybe revisiting that topic, but Quite frankly, I feel like I've said all I can say about that topic. There's not really been much that I would say different today than I said over a year ago in that episode. And so if you'll indulge me, if you are interested in what I have to say on that topic, I'll leave a link to episode number 8 in the show notes, or you can scroll back through on your favorite podcast player and find episode number 8 and listen to it. But I just want you to know, you certainly can buy transplants, and that's okay. I did that for many, many, many years before I started my own. My grandfather did it for many, many, many years. There are a lot of reasons why you might consider doing that. And if you are brand new to gardening and this is your first year gardening, my recommendation would be to consider that. It might be the best way to start your garden is with transplants that have been hardened off properly and so forth. But if you're somebody who likes to dive on into the deep end of gardening or whatever it is that you're doing, then by all means, give it a whirl. If you fail, you've got the transplants that you can buy at Lowe's, Home Depot, Walmart, Target, wherever, to back you up. And so it's all good either way. But on this episode, what we're going to do is just talk a little bit more in depth about what veggies you might want to start indoors. We're going to talk about which ones you almost always are going to want to direct sow. And then we're going to talk about some of the ones that can kind of go either way and help you decide which ones you should start indoors and which ones you might want to consider direct sowing. We're going to talk a little bit about how to choose the varieties that you're going to start, because I think if you're brand new to this, that can be a little bit overwhelming. If you've been used to buying transplants, obviously you know that you go to the garden center and you might have 3 or 4 varieties to choose from. You look at the seed catalog and you might have hundreds of varieties to choose from. So how do you decide what varieties to choose? We're going to talk about that. We'll talk about how many you should start. And finally, we'll talk about when you should start them. And then on next week's episode, we're going to talk more about the nuts and bolts of seed starting, the containers, the soil medium, and some of the gear that you might want to invest in to help you really achieve maximum success in this area. And then the week after that, what we're going to talk about are some of my successes, some of my failures in this area, some of the things that I've tried that have worked well, some of the things that haven't worked so well. And then we're going to talk about my current seed starting system. So having said all of that, let's dive right into this week's episode. You've decided you want to start your own transplants. Which ones should you start indoors? Which ones should you start outdoors? And which ones can go either way? So there are a few things that to me are kind of driving factors into making this decision. First of all is the crop itself. Some things should always. And when I say always, folks, these are not, I mean, the vegetable cops are not going to come arrest you if you don't follow these. But these are really, I think, best practices that most gardeners are going to agree on, as much as gardeners can agree on anything. But there are some things that really almost always should be started indoors. And that would be things like tomatoes and peppers. There are not many people who would recommend that you direct sow those or start them outdoors. There may be some climates where that makes sense, but for the vast majority of people, in particular, tomatoes and peppers should always be started indoors. And when I say indoors, that might be in a cold frame, it might be in a greenhouse, but it's going to be in some kind of medium where you can really control the environment a little bit better than just putting it in the ground and letting Mother Nature take over. Now, there's going to be some things that always should be direct sown, and that would include root crops like carrots and beets and turnips and parsnips and rutabagas, anything like that. I also really include beans and peas and corn in this category as well. Those are things that I just always direct sow. I never, ever start those and then transplant them. Now, technically, I do think that you know, the master gardeners would say that technically you can start beans, peas, and corn indoors and then transplant them if you do it very carefully. But most people would just say direct sow them. There's not really any benefit to starting them indoors. And then there are some things that can really go either way. They can be direct sown or they can be transplanted. And those would be things like lettuce, celery, chard, spinach, garlic, onions, coal crops such as broccoli, cabbage, and cauliflower, or your cucurbits, which is your squash, your cucumbers, and your melons. So the second driving factor in determining what you're going to start indoors and what you're going to start outdoors is really the amount of space that you have indoors to dedicate to seed starting. So if you're just using a windowsill, you may only have room enough to start your peppers and your tomatoes. You may not have an option of starting anything else because you have just a really small amount of space to dedicate to this. If you have a bit more room, then you might want to expand into starting your cauliflower or your broccoli or your cabbage indoors, or maybe you want to get a jump start on your lettuce or your spinach or things of that nature. And then obviously, if space is of no concern to you, then you might want to start a little bit of everything. So certainly the amount of space that you have to dedicate to seed starting is certainly going to be a driving factor in determining what you start indoors and what you start outside direct sown. The third driving factor is the variety that you want to grow and the length of your growing season. Now, you may have a variety that you want to grow that's kind of pushing the bounds of the average number of days in your growing season. So those of us who live up north, our growing season is much shorter than those of you who live down in the southern part of the United States. And certainly the more northern you get, I mean, you get up into Alaska, they've got a very short growing season. Northern Canada, a very short growing season. And so they may have to push the boundaries a little bit more of what is going to be sown indoors and then later transplanted versus what they might direct sow, simply because the variety that they have pushes the boundaries as far as the number of days that they have in a growing season. So how do you know what the length is of your growing season? Well, first of all, you might want to know what zone you're in. That's not a full-on indicator, but it is definitely helpful to know what zone you're in. But then simply Google, I mean, Google is your friend, your last average frost date and your first average frost date for your zip code. You can also go over to davesgarden.com or almanac.com, and both of them have calculators that will help you know what the last average frost date is. So that would be your spring frost date, and then what your first average frost date is in the fall. And then you simply can figure out between those days how many days are between there. And again, there are calculators that can help you do that. And so that's going to give you a good indicator as far as how many days you have available in a typical growing season, as typical as a growing season can be. Finally, you might decide to start some things indoors simply to get a jump on the growing season to really maximize your harvest from a particular piece of ground in your garden. So maybe you might want to start lettuce indoors. Lettuce is something that it transplants very well. So you start it indoors, and then you might decide that you want to direct sow some lettuce so that you have a perpetual harvest going on. So the stuff that you started indoors, you begin harvesting that. As that comes to an end, you start harvesting the things that you had direct sown. And as you start harvesting the things that you had direct sown, maybe you pull the things that you had transplanted and direct sow some more. And so again, now you have been able to really kickstart that process because you started some lettuce indoors. Another thing that you might do is you might start something indoors so that you can succession plant. Spinach and even lettuce is something that really prefers cooler weather. And so you might plant those so that you have a good amount of spinach or lettuce in April, May, June. But then July comes along and it's starting to get a little bit warmer. And so maybe you decided to start some Brussels sprouts indoors, and then you pull your spinach, you pull your lettuce, you drop your Brussels sprouts in, and they're going to benefit from those late frosts in the fall, which is going to help sweeten them up. And so now, again, what you've been able to do is extend your harvest and achieve a maximum amount of production by succession planting and starting something indoors that you're going to then plant outside, even though technically you probably could have direct sown those Brussels sprouts into your garden earlier in the season. So again, the type of vegetables you're going to grow, the amount of room you have to start them, the length of your growing season, and your succession planning plans are going to all help you decide what you should start indoors. And if you do question any of that, whether or not something should be started indoors or whether or not something should be started outside, many times on your seed packets, it's going to tell you if something should be started indoors, only started outdoors, or it could go either way. So here I have this packet of Bella Rosa hybrid tomato seeds from Totally Tomatoes. And on here it says, seed starting indoors, start seed 5 to 7 weeks prior to last frost and sterile starting mix. And then next to direct sow, it says, not recommended. Now here is a packet of Chinese cabbage from Pine Tree Garden Seeds. And on it, it says, start indoors 4 to 6 weeks before last frost with 65 to 75 degree soil temperatures. Direct sow outdoors in spring. So this obviously is a variety that could go either way. You can start it indoors or you can direct sow it. And then finally, here is a packet of pinto beans. And this simply says to plant one each deep 4 to 6 inches apart when danger of frost has passed. So this is indicating that these are seeds that are best direct sown. So if you're kind of not sure which way to go, a lot of times the seed packet is going to give you a good indicator as far as whether or not it should only be started indoors, only should be direct sown, or if it can go either way. So then the next question is, what variety should you grow? The sheer number of varieties out there can be overwhelming. Again, if you go down to the big box store or if you go to your local home and garden center and you pick up transplants, a lot of times, just using tomatoes as an example, you might have 4 or 5 slicers to choose from if you're lucky. You might have a few different varieties of plum tomatoes, maybe a handful of cherries and grape tomatoes. When it's all said and done, you probably have less than 15 varieties to choose from. Now you get a seed catalog, and certainly you are going to see that there are sometimes it almost feels like hundreds of varieties available. So how do you know which varieties to choose? Certainly not every variety is going to be adapted well for every climate. And so my recommendation is, if you can, talk with other gardeners in your area to find out what varieties they like and what varieties have done well for them. That's going to be a very good starting point for you. Or if you're going to take the recommendations of content creators, keep in mind where those content creators are located. So, for example, while I really enjoy the Cog Hill Farm channel with Jason Smith, and he has a lot of great gardening information, he lives in a vastly different climate than what I do. And so I knew last year when I tried the Bella Rosa tomato on his recommendation that he loved it, I knew that it might not do well for me because I live in such a totally different climate. The same with Jessica at Roots and Refuge or the guys at Haas Tools. They all live in much different climates than what I do. And so the varieties that work well for them might not work well for me. So if you're going to take the recommendations of content creators, then certainly keep that in mind. And if you can, find somebody who is in a climate very similar to you, and then take those recommendations maybe a little bit more seriously. The other thing I would tell you is this: grow what you like to eat. So if you're someone who doesn't like raw tomatoes, then probably growing a whole bunch of slicers or a whole bunch of cherry tomatoes, it's probably not going to make a whole lot of sense for you. Maybe you just need to focus on raising a paste tomato of some sort and make sauces. But maybe growing a whole bunch of slicers and cherry tomatoes wouldn't make sense. Or if you're someone who doesn't like hot peppers, then don't grow jalapenos or habaneros or scorpions. So again, grow what you like to eat. Also, when you are ordering varieties from a seed catalog, or even if you're at the store, you should have at least a rough understanding as far as the number of days in your growing season, and make sure that you're not buying varieties that exceed that exponentially. There may be some varieties that kind of push the boundaries and you might want to roll the dice on them, but I certainly wouldn't want to dedicate half of my garden to varieties that I'm not sure are adapted well for my area. So just keep that in mind. The growing season will also impact the varieties that you may choose to grow. And as I mentioned, the days to maturity that can be found on a lot of seed packets, like this one here says 50 days. What that means, and this is something that I didn't understand for a very, very long time, but it's not 50 days from the moment that you plant it. If it's something that you're going to direct sow, it's an average of 50 days from the time the seed germinates. So this cucumber that I'm looking at, Parisian pickle, germinates in 6 to 10 days. So this 50 days is 50 plus the 6 to 10 days. So I'm looking at 56 to 60 days before I'm going to begin achieving a harvest of Parisian pickle cucumbers. So you just need to keep that in mind. But that's for something that's direct sown. On something like a tomato, it might give you, like this here, this is the Bella Rosa hybrid. It says 75 days. Well, that's not 75 days from germination. It's 75 days from the moment that you transplant it. Okay? So keep that in mind. Something that you transplant, the clock starts ticking when you transplant it. Something that you direct sow, the clock starts ticking when the seed germinates. Also keep in mind, these are averages. These are well-informed guesses. I'm not going to call them swags, but this isn't an exact science that you can sit out there with a stopwatch. Oh, we're at 56 days. Where's my cucumber? All right. These are generalities, but in that ballpark is when you should start achieving the harvest. So anyhow, enough about that. Let's move on to how many of each plant should you start? You're going to start some things indoors. How many of each should you start? Now, some of this, again, may be dictated by the amount of room that you have to dedicate to starting seeds. Some of this obviously depends on what you're going to do with the harvest. Back on episode 6, and I'll leave a link in the show notes, I did an episode entitled Preparing for the Harvest. And on that episode, I talked about having an idea of how you're going to use the vegetables and how that can help you understand how much you should plant. How many people are in your family? Are you going to preserve the harvest, or are you only going to eat it fresh? Those are the kinds of things that are going to help you understand how much you should plant. There are all kinds of calculators out on the web that will help you know how many plants of something you should have per person in your household to get you through an entire year. So maybe, you know, a potato plant on average produces 10 pounds and you need 50 pounds per person. So you need 5 potato plants on average per person for a year's supply of potatoes. And I'm just making those numbers up off the top of my head. Okay. So don't hold me to that. But there are a lot of calculators out there that do that. If you Google those, that may help you. But the reality is that for many of us, what really drives this is simply the size of our garden. Most of us don't have unlimited garden space. And so this is really where it comes down to mapping out your garden and why doing that ahead of time is really, really smart. Now, you can certainly do this on graph paper and sit down, figure out how big your garden is, draw it out, figure out the number of rows, the spacing that you should have between rows, depending on the types of plants, the spacing in between the plants. And then you're going to know approximately, you know, in a 10-foot row, you could get, you know, I don't know, 7 broccoli plants. Again, making it up off the top of my head. I don't know what the proper spacing is, but potentially that would be okay. I know I need 7 broccoli plants to fill a 10-foot row. I've got 2 10-foot rows that I want to dedicate to broccoli. So now I know I need, what is it? Did I say 7 plants, 10 plants, 14, whatever, but you get the idea. And so you certainly can go at it in that direction. But this is really where the program that I talked about last week, I mentioned it before, growveg.com. They're not a sponsor of the program. I don't get any money off this. It's just a program that I use and I really love. It will help you know how many plants go in a row. Or if you're using the square foot garden method, how many plants go in a square foot. And so that's really going to be a very, very easy way for you to lay out your garden and know exactly how many transplants you can fit in a particular place. Now, I know all of us, we're like toddlers, right? Our eyes are bigger than our stomach. We're going to put way too much food on our plate and then not be able to finish it all. And as gardeners, the temptation is always, oh yeah, I can smush in one more plant. It always is. And so that's the great thing about growveg.com is it really does help you know what you should put in there. And then if you decide to push the boundaries, well, it's on you. But at least you know how many plants really are recommended to go in that area. And then that helps you know how many of those you should start. Now, I certainly wouldn't recommend that you start only the number of plants that the plan calls for. I would recommend that you start a few extra and maybe more than just a few extra, just in case some don't sprout, or if you have troubles hardening them off, or if they die of transplant shock, or if something comes along and eats them off, or whatever happens, then you have some backups that you can go ahead and put out into your garden. But if everything goes according to plan and you have a few extras left over, you may be able to sell them. You may be able to barter for some things, or you may simply want to give them away to other people. And it's a way for you to bless others, encourage others to start their journey towards self-sufficiency, self-reliance, and sustainability. So the last thing we're going to talk about is when you should start your plants. This is the one that's tough, I think, for a lot of us, especially if you're brand new to this. But even for me, it's still a little bit overwhelming at times knowing exactly when I should start this versus that. Because one of the things you don't do is you don't start everything all at once. You may start tomatoes at one point and peppers at another point and cabbage at another point. Or depending on what your plans are, you might start some cabbage today and you might start a few more cabbage in a couple of weeks. So again, keep that in mind. But it's important to make sure that you don't start too early, just as it's important to make sure you don't start too late. And if you're in the northern part of the United States like I am, it's really easy to get sucked into wanting to get started now. Because you see, all of our southern friends are starting their stuff now. And sometimes it's just very easy to feel like we're behind because everybody else down south is getting started. Resist the urge. Resist the temptation to get started too early. If you start too early, what's going to happen is you're going to spend a fortune in containers. As you have to pot everything up, you're going to spend a fortune in dirt as you have to pot everything up. And then when it comes time to harden things off, it's a lot more difficult to harden off large plants than it is smaller flats of transplants. So don't give into the urge to get started too early. So how do you know when is the right time to start? Well, there's a lot of great ways to do that. Number one, on the seed packets, many of the seed packets will tell you This one here, again, the Bella Rosa says start seed 5 to 7 weeks prior to last frost date. So this is where knowing your average last frost date is important. And then you can calculate back 5 to 7 weeks and start the seeds in that time frame. Another thing that you can do is you could go on over to the Farmer's Almanac website, almanac.com, I believe. And they have seed starting guides there where you can plug in your zip code or maybe the closest local town, and they will generate a seed starting schedule for you that you can go ahead and print out. Now, if you are someone who has the Square Foot Gardening book by Mel Bartholomew, like I do, and you're a square foot gardener, in the back of this book are planting guides. And in as part of that, they have the spring indoor seed starting schedule. So that's another resource that can be helpful to you. Or there is this helpful little thing here called Clyde's Garden Calendar or Garden Planner. And what this is it's just something that you kind of pull it, you line a red line up with your last average frost date. And then on here, he has all of the information when to start things indoors, when to do the first planting outside, and then when you can anticipate a harvest. Now, this is based on generalities. Different varieties are slightly different, but it's a good starting point. I don't agree with all of the calculations on here, but it still is a good starting point. Now, the thing is, what I recommend you do is pick one of them. Don't try to use all of them. Pick a horse and ride it. But I think all of them are very, very good. They get you in the ballpark. They're not perfect, but they get you in the ballpark, and they will help you know the time frame at which you should be starting your seeds and when you should be moving them outdoors. So I know that's a lot of information that we've covered today. If you have any kind of questions about any of it, reach out to me, brian@thehomesteadjourney.net. I'd be glad to answer any questions. If there's something that I've said that you disagree with, I'm certainly happy to have that dialogue as well. You can reach out to me again via email or on any of our social media sites, Instagram, Facebook. I'm glad to have that conversation. I'm not a master gardener. I'm not an expert, but these are kind of the rules that I live by, the things that I've learned as I've been starting seeds now, I think 5-6 years. And so I hope that you've found it helpful. As always, the music on this episode was provided by audionautics.com. And until next time, everybody, keep up the good work.